You have no liking of water? Hailey asked anxiously.
I'll have you know I'm a better swimmer than you.
Much gleeful.
Ione, Tranquility said. The Lady Macbeth has just emerged from a ZTT jump. Joshua has requested docking permission.
Joshua! Ione shouted.
Too late, she remembered, Kaint did have auditory senses. Hailey's arms writhed in alarm.
Panic, fright, joy shared.
She shied back from Ione and promptly fell down.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Ione splashed towards her. Nang and Lyria came up and slipped their arms under Hailey's belly, while the baby Kaint coiled an arm tip around Ione's hand. She tugged.
Query Joshua identity?
Hailey asked as she regained her feet and stood swaying unsteadily.
He's another friend of mine. More friends. My friend. I meet him.
Ione opened her mouth, then thought about it. Away at the back of her mind, Tranquility was registering a serene hauteur. Ione closed her mouth.
I think we'll wait until you understand humans a little better.
It was almost an infallible rule that to be an Edenist, a human must have affinity and live in a habitat. Certainly every Edenist returned to a habitat for their death, or had their thoughts transferred to one after death. Physically, the Bitech systems, integral to their society, were capable of sustaining a very high standard of living at little financial cost. The price of steering asteroidal rubble into a habitat more, the internal mechanical systems like star scraper lifts, and the tube carriage network. Culturally, though, the symbiosis was much more subtle. With the exception of serpents, there were no physiological problems among the Edenist population. Although they displayed a full emotional range, as individuals they were all extremely well adjusted. The knowledge that they would continue as part of the habitat personality after bodily death acted as a tremendous stabilizing influence, banishing a great many common human psychoses. It was a liberation which bestowed them with a universal confidence and poise that atomists nearly always considered to be unbridled arrogance. The disparity in wealth between the two cultures also contributed to the image of Edenists being humanity's aristocrats. Edenism, then, was dependent on habitats, and Bitech habitats were only to be found orbiting gas giants. They were totally reliant on the vast magnetospheres of such worlds for power. Photosynthesis was a wholly impractical method of supplying a habitat's energy demands. It necessitated the deployment of vast leaf analog membranes and the numerous difficulties inherent in doing so from a rotating structure, as well as being unacceptably susceptible to damage from both particle impact and cosmic radiation. So the Edenists were confined to colonizing the Confederation's gas giants. However, there was one exception, one terra-comptable planet which they settled successfully, Atlantis, so named because it was a single giant ocean of salt water. Its sole exports were the seafood delicacies for which it was renowned across the Confederation. The variety of marine life below its waves was so great that even 240 years after its discovery, barely one-third had been classified. A vast number of traders, both independent and corporate, were attracted to it, which was why Syrinx flew Oenone right there after their naval duty tour finished. Syrinx had decided to go straight into the independent trading business once her discharge order came through. The prospect of years spent on Helium-3 deliveries depressed her. A lot of Voidhawk captains took on the tanker contracts for the stability they offered. It was exactly what she'd done when Oenone started flying. But the last thing she wanted was to wind up in a rigid flight routine again. The Navy had given her quite enough of that already, a feeling the rest of the crew heartily shared, apart from Chi, who left along with all the weapons hardware in the lower hull. Although some doubts lingered obstinately in her mind, it was a big step from the precisely ordered Navy life she was used to. On seeing her daughter dithering, Athene pointed out that Norfolk was approaching conjunction and spent an evening reminiscing on her own flights to collect the planet's fabled tears. 3 days later, Enone left the maintenance station dock at Romulus, new cargo cradles fitted, a new civilian registration filed, licensed by the Confederation Astronautics Board to carry freight and up to 20 passengers, crew toroid refurbished, and crew members in a tigerish frame of mind.